Hey everyone, welcome back to the Someone to Tell To podcast. We're so glad to have you with us for this upcoming dialogue with a good friend of ours named Orly. This was such a peaceful conversation. I think we sometimes, especially in a busy world where we're running from meeting to meeting, maybe we're just overly scheduled. Sometimes just taking an hour, and you will if you tune into this episode, just to kind of slow down, take a deep breath. And Orly kind of did that for us in this hour, and I really enjoyed it.
As we're recording this, it's been a long week, a very busy week, a very long day today. And he just put us in a place of just kind of chill and peace and relaxation. So it's a great way to end this day and to end this week. So let's talk about our guest. Our guest today is Orly Israel. He lives in Los Angeles, California, and he's the founder of The Listening Table. And he writes this: "Coming from a media background, I'm painfully aware how important visibility and reach are in society. So much emphasis is placed on if you've got an audience or if others follow you, and the attention is paid or not paid to what you say. So much so that attention is rarely paid to people's ability to listen. The Listening Table aims to flip that ideology around and empower people to be better listeners, because better listeners develop more relationship resilience, which directly combats the loneliness epidemic that is facing our more connected than ever world today. We've unintentionally traded the quality of our relationships for our quantity of them, but more is not always better. The Listening Table was founded to teach developing adults and people of all ages how to recognize their own barriers to quality connections and identify customizable strategies to refining one's own communication skills. By relying on data, experts, and peers, I aim to create the most affordable, most accessible communication skills training and leadership program to date. Think free hugs, but with more listening." Orly is a graduate of the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. We're grateful to have him as our guest.
Well, Orly, welcome to the Someone to Tell To podcast. We're excited to have this conversation with you.
Me too. Stoked.
So we always like to start our conversations with this. Just tell us about yourself, your story, how you got to where you are today.
So I am a newly 30-year-old man, and the most important thing in my life is the relationships I have with people. And I knew this from a very young age when me and my younger siblings, we would fight a lot. Three boys within 7 years of each other. It just was chaos. And because my dad is a television writer, I learned about when you're writing stories, you're choosing the words your characters say. If you want them to have certain, be likable, they say these things. To be the villain, they say these things. There's so many nuances to when you're choosing what people's words are. And I started seeing, why am I saying this to my siblings or behaving like this? Why are they saying this to me or my other family members? And it made me so confused about, why don't we all just say the thing the good guy would say, right? And I was curious, if we're writing our own stories and living our own lives this way, why do we still make the choices that take us down these negative paths, these paths to disconnection? And so I decided to take in charge of my story to stop using physical violence, which is an older brother thing. And that changed the relationships I had with my siblings almost immediately. And the verbal communication skills came slower, realizing you could say different things. But I just became enamored with the question, why can't we get along? And why do people make these choices to say things that hurt each other? And I was so inspired by this kind of question and wanted to write stories that would inspire people to take control of their own choices and on the side, I ended up volunteering in prisons and homeless shelters and for the suicide hotline. And I just got to be super clear about a principle I never understood until then, which is you can't make the choice to say the kind thing if you've never heard the kind thing said in your life. You know, if you've never seen forgiveness, you can't do forgiveness. It's not like, why aren't you doing this? It's, you don't know how to do this. And that was when I realized I can make a difference in people's lives by helping others have that awareness to say, there are a lot of things you might not know you can say. A lot of ways you could be a better communicator. And I ended up taking some communication classes because I was so curious how people teach it. And all of the classes always start with listening. So I decided, after hearing a teacher say, learning how to communicate is a lot like learning how to swim. You can read as many books on swimming as you want, but if you don't get in the water, you're never going to learn how to swim. And that was told to me on a Wednesday, and I decided I need to learn how to swim. So on that Friday, I set up my first listening table, basically the water, a table with a sign that says here to listen on it, so I could practice listening to strangers. And I had a life-changing conversation and decided I'm going to do this every week until I don't like it anymore. And I've done it 178 times since then. Mm-hmm. And now I make videos about it and I help people set up their own listening tables in schools and in homeless shelters and in community centers all across the world.
Take us back to that first conversation. What happened in that first conversation? What did you hear? What inspired you? What shifted maybe your way of thinking about humans?
It was my first table, and I set up near the high school near where I live, just on this grass field. And I'm sitting there for about an hour and a half, and no one has stopped by. I'm thinking I'm doing something wrong. Maybe it's a bad location. Maybe I shouldn't do this in front of a school as an adult. You know, my friend's like, that's kind of creepy. And then a car whips around in the middle of the road, parks, and a woman gets out and walks over to me and says, oh my God, I love this. And it's my next door neighbor, my immediate next door neighbor, who's lived there for, I don't know how long, but I've lived there for a year and a half, and we've never really connected. And she sits down, and for about 15 to 20 minutes, we connect with each other on a deep level. She talks about the pandemic, because this was in the middle of the pandemic, and how she's dealing with some issue that is causing her a ton of stress, and she wanted to come out of the pandemic stronger. And I remember just trying to listen to her and understand her more, and I said, what does stronger mean to you? And she had this moment of reflection where she said, I never thought about it. I've been trying to be stronger, but I never thought about what stronger was. And we had this conversation about what it means to be resilient. And after about 15 minutes, she's like, oh, I left my daughter in the car. I gotta go. Her daughter's a teenager, not a baby. But just having this incredible conversation, and I had such a deep connection to her. And every time we, you know, I'd invite her over to house parties and our families would hang out, or I would, me and my roommates and her family would, they'd come over sometimes and we'd play games. And it was just, I was like, wow, I have no idea. I would never have had this deep connection with someone if I didn't go out and offer to have it. And I felt so good. Who would have thought a simple conversation with the next door neighbor could have been so rewarding?
What was the catalyst that caused the depth of the conversation to happen? Can you pinpoint that? Can you say what it was that when you felt this conversation going to a really deep or intimate level?
I think that it was the offer to listen.
Simple offer.
So simple. The sign only said here to listen. It didn't yet say no judgment, no advice, no charge. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm here to listen to anything anybody wants to talk about. And she said, oh, I got plenty to talk about. And she also might have said, and I'm not making this up, but I don't know exactly the words she used because it was a long time ago, that she couldn't really talk about this with her family because she's got to be the powerful mom. You know, she's got to be the business owner, and you can't really talk to your kids about this, and maybe your husband's heard enough about it for now. So being able to have somebody to talk to who won't be resisting you coming to them in a place of vulnerability, you know, it doesn't maintain images. I think that was one key element, but I think the most important thing was just somehow here to listen, whatever you want to talk about.
So now you've had over 100 tables set up. Tell us more just about the listening table and how the concept and how it works and how also it was linked to prison. I think that's an important backstory for everybody here.
Yeah. The whole concept comes from this organization that I got to volunteer from called Freedom to Choose. And it's all about choice, right? They talk about the moment between a stimulus and your reaction or your response to it. And if you can create just a second of pause where you choose what you're going to do, it can be the difference in everything in your life. It can be the difference in going to prison or not. And so I was volunteering for this organization that a friend of mine referred me to. I think I was the youngest person by a decade at least who was in there. So I was in my early 20s. And basically you go into prisons and you form trios. And one person is the sharer and one person is the listener and one person is the facilitator. One person is the silent listener. They don't say anything. And the facilitator is the more active listener. And so there's a sheet of 8 questions every time you go in, and there's always different topics. Sometimes it's about triggers, sometimes it's about mistakes, sometimes it's about judgment that you make on yourself or other people. And in the span of maybe 12 minutes, you get a turn to say the things. You go down the list of questions. The facilitator kind of does active listening. So they say, you know, is this what I'm hearing? It sounds like this. And they also keep track of the questions so you move along. And the silent listener doesn't say anything. And then you switch. And one of the things that was really important in their philosophy is the person from the outside, the person from not in prison, always has to be the first sharer. Because if you don't show up and be vulnerable, how can you possibly expect somebody else to do that? And I would share very personal things with these people who are in prison, and they would share very personal things also, and nothing about it was unique to prison people, right? It was, I'm scared when my mom visits me because she doesn't like how I wear my hair. Or I feel like I'm letting my kids down because I can't be there for them. You know, I didn't have a single conversation where I felt like, whoa, this person is some kind of animal. This person's some kind of monster who hates the world and wants bad things to happen. It just feels like these are people who, well, I remember one of the lectures, because in the middle of some of the multi-day sessions, the leaders of this organization do a presentation. Short, because they are dealing with people that may not have the most patience. And I remember there was one day where they brought out a sign, and it was just a, like a cardboard, you know, easel, and it said, hurt, and then a line, and it said anger, and then a line, and that said hurt, and then it said love. And the concept was, if you're feeling angry, it's probably because you're feeling hurt. And if you're feeling hurt, it's probably because something you love is being threatened, or is damaged, or taken away, or harmed in some way. And to me, the concept of, oh yeah, if I'm feeling angry, it's probably because I'm feeling upset about something else, wasn't so distant for me. You know, I grew up thinking about a lot of how people make choices and life, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, these are the basics. But the murmur in the room of tens of people, I never thought that I'm feeling mad because I'm hurt. You know what? It's just, it was eye-opening for me to realize there is a social inequity. You know, to realize if you've never been forgiven, you don't know how to forgive, right? If you've never been shown I love you, it's so hard for you to do that for someone else. And so it really brought me to the understanding that we're not all operating from the same place. We just haven't had the opportunity to learn these same basic skills that maybe they're not basic skills. You know, they're not. We all learn how to walk. We all learn how to eat. We all learn how to sleep. But until somebody tells you that, you know, watermelons have different nutritional content than Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and there are certain times of the day that are better for you to eat, and certain types of food that are better, just because you know how to put food in your mouth doesn't necessarily mean you know how to eat what's best for you, right? Even still, I'm not sure if I know, you know, my blood type and the aging and the diet. And so learning how to eat is a constant, and learning how to communicate is the same thing. You always can improve. And so being able to see that, I was really fortunate in how I was raised, and not everyone has that, just made me aware that, wow, if only I could bring this to people before they end up in prison, wouldn't that be amazing? So that they could do the forgiveness before they did the crime. You know, so they could settle the argument before the divorce. And I know that's not, like, it's not that simple, but even in the communication classes that I would take with people that weren't incarcerated or homeless, so many people would arrive there saying, oh, I'm estranged from my siblings, I'm estranged from my parents, I'm divorced multiple times, you know, I can't get along with people, I'm held hostage at work by coworkers who don't respect my boundaries. And it comes from a place of when it gets so bad that you realize you have to make a change, rather than what I think would be amazing is to realize it's so much more fun when you get along with the people in your life. So how can we empower people to nurture those connections before the poop hits the fan? And that really inspired me to take action in a way that said, look, do it before it's too late, or before it's very late, maybe not too late.
You talk about not knowing how to forgive unless you've been forgiven, unless you've seen forgiveness happening, or not knowing really how to love someone because you perhaps haven't been loved yourself. You obviously, there were, well, it seems, because at a very young age, you realize some of these things. And, you know, you entered into this space, this listening space now because of that. So who or what were the catalysts for you to teach you these things, to show you these things, to help you be empathetic and compassionate and understanding and gracious to want to do this work?
Yeah. I've had some really great role models. My parents are phenomenal. You know, the group of people they surround themselves with are terrific. I've had some really good friendships. And I have also learned a ton from fiction and nonfiction and biographies. You know, I think there's so many great stories of people. You know, this is back to my childhood, but I love anime. Right, the Japanese comics and TV shows. And the whole moral of that story is always the power of friendship is the strongest power and just the best thing. And whenever the ultimate evil and the hero finally come to battle, in the end of every single one of them, it seems, they summon the power of all of their friends and they persist. And maybe that's totally on the mark of how people make a change in the world against not just fictional monsters and aliens, but friendship has been the best thing in my life. And I think that I have also been fortunate enough to have a lot of anti-role models, you know, people who I see things and I go, well, why would they do that? How could you say that to someone you care about? I knew that from my personal life, you know, I'd hear a lot of that at home, just to think like, how could you say that to somebody who you love? Because clearly you don't mean it, but you're saying it anyways. And just having this creative, you know, spending so much time around books and thinking about how authors spent so much time thinking about every line that their characters write or say because they want to mean exactly what they want to communicate. And I thought how wonderful it would be if we said exactly what we wanted people to understand about where we're coming from.
Yeah.
You've said that every conversation should be fun. How does that happen?
Well, I think it comes from a place of being open to it being fun. Now, what is fun, really, but challenging the unknown and being surprised? So that doesn't mean that you can say you should never be sad, right? You should never have hard conversations or shy away from heartbreaking or painful conversations. But I think that when we come from a place of empathy and gratitude, I mean, this is personal, but that's probably best. You know, I just went through a breakup very recently, and it was one of the best conversations I've ever had in my life. And I feel like we came through this beautiful place of understanding and human connection and the recognition that, you know, we can still care for each other and really respect each other and know that it's not the best for us to be doing the choices we have as a couple. And even though I would say that it has left me really sad, you know, mourning the relationship, it was such a beautiful conversation of two souls really being able to be there for each other. And also, that is personal growth, which I thought was such a tremendous experience to be able to have and to be able to challenge myself to feel love, deep love and understanding for someone who's saying something that can be interpreted as really hurtful by seeing the humanity and the bravery and the decision to say, you know, I got to face life on my own right now. And to say, instead of like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? What's my Orly's problem that makes me less of a person, less of a man, not enough? Instead of seeing all those questions of insecurity, to be able to honor the commitment that my partner had for herself, to say, you know, I'm willing to put myself in at risk to do something I feel like is right. Was it a fun conversation? I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, it was a great conversation. I wouldn't say I'd want to do it all the time, but I also wouldn't say that it was bad. And so that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't mean like you should try laughing when you're saying my condolences for someone who's lost a relative. You know, it shouldn't be about making jokes or making light of the situation, but I think that if you appreciate the ability to be afraid to have that conversation because it's scary to talk to people when you want to be there for them and you don't know. It's always such a challenge when someone loses a loved one and you're faced with all of these, well, I don't know if I could say something that'll make it better. You can't. You can't say anything that'll make it better. But taking that leap of faith and saying, my willingness to show up for you, even if it's sloppy, even if it's shaky, even if it's I'm not confident in it, but my willingness to be there for you overrides my fear. And then it's like being on a water slide, you know? You get off and it was exhilarating. I'm so glad that I did that. And I, to that specific example, I've heard several times from people. I haven't found myself in this situation yet, fortunately, but I've heard several times that, you know, you don't remember people who come to you and say their condolences in like a sloppy way. You remember the people who didn't reach out to you at all. And I just think that the human connection is such a beautiful thing. So, yeah, all conversations, maybe fun isn't the perfect word for it, but I think you can look back on almost all of them and say, there was something I gained from that that made my experience of being a human more.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that's a vulnerable thing to talk about, and I appreciate that you did that. And thanks. We all know that we're living in some times that are somewhat contentious, and there are a lot of division, a lot of disconnection, a lot of people who just, you know, are polar, you know, poles apart from one another in many, many ways. So how can the work of listening, the gift of listening, help us in a time such as this? No, it was a time of disconnection, it's certainly a time of great loneliness for many people, and a time of just division. How can listening help this time and change it? We hope for the better.
It's a great question. I feel like both of us have. I'd be very interested in hearing your answer to this too, if you wouldn't mind sharing afterwards. So I'll keep mine relatively short. I think that, you know, you said like it's divided time, I think. And I really, even though this isn't a political stance that people should be better listeners, I think that there is a real importance for people to become better listeners, because I think we have so much more in common than we choose to see. And it's because one person saying one incendiary comment or something that so disagrees with your own sorts of values, you'll shut off and you won't be interested. I won't talk to this person anymore because they don't support the same thing. And that happened to me years ago when the Black Lives Matter moment was at its highest. And, you know, I would post certain things on social media and people would write to me and say, oh, you believe in this? I don't need to talk to you anymore. I said, well, I don't need to talk to you either if you don't support, you know, equality of people. And I think that is counterproductive to us all getting along. And so I really hope that we get to a place where, you know, ideally, people who make policy in the future can grow up in a better listening world where someone might have a different opinion than them. And instead of saying, well, he has a bad opinion, let's get him, you know, kicked out. Why does he have that opinion or she have that opinion? And if we have a good enough conversation about it, maybe we'll realize that the thing we're trying to solve isn't the thing we are necessarily talking about in this very surface level moment. You know, the in vitro fertilization situation in one of these states is a really timely example of, now that some bill has been passed, a bunch of Republicans who voted for it are realizing they're losing rights to something they didn't think they'd lose the rights for. And they didn't consider, you know, we want to block this. And now they've blocked something to do with the egg that they're trying to roll back. Because they didn't have the conversation. It was just, I want to prove the other person wrong and keep them from getting what they want, instead of, let's lay all our cards on the table and see if we're trying to achieve something that requires more than just yelling at each other from across the way. So I think that listening will allow greater collaboration. So we'll have like a shared sense of peace. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to share this. It's a quote actually from the Dalai Lama. And he was famous for saying, when you talk, you're only repeating what you already know. But if you listen, you may learn something new. And I think we try to make this point often. If we can start to see every human being as having something important to teach us, that really levels the playing field quickly, because it doesn't matter if there are certain things that we disagree on, there's still some things that we need to know that they're going to teach us by getting to know them better. And so it's just broadening our horizons. So if we see people that way, it just values us as human beings.
Also, to add to that, there's a reason why people believe what they believe, or talk the way they talk, do what they do. There's usually there's something behind that. Maybe something, some experience they've had, something they've lost somewhere where they've been hurt, somewhere where they have felt disrespected. They felt as if maybe they don't matter, they're not important, that others look down on them. I mean, we could go, you know, a whole myriad of reasons why people react the way they do, believe what they do. And I think when we can get and have the opportunity to know their story, to know where they've come from, what they have experienced, what they've felt, what they've lost, it, and listening to all of it might still not make us agree with their decisions, their choices, their opinions, but it maybe helps us to understand where those thoughts, opinions, actions come from. And that can make a huge difference. I mean, one of the heroes that we have is Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. And he would often quote a statement that he didn't come up with, but it's someone else did, but it was one that he believed very strongly in and used it once he heard it, that you can't help, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially can't help but love someone once you know their story. Again, doesn't mean that you have to necessarily agree with that, with them and their opinions and actions, but when you know their story and you know where they've come from, it makes them, well, it helps us to understand and see them as human beings and not as just some, you know, some other over there that we're opposed to. But we begin to see the common humanity that we all share. And that absolutely helps for some of the division, some of the vitriol, some of the anger, some of the negativeness to begin to be chipped away at. And maybe we can begin to see in the chipping away, you know, a real person with real feelings and real hurts and real pain and even real goodness underneath.
This is the challenge of being on a podcast with you guys. As you expect me to talk, but I want to hear you. I have so much I want to hear from you. You know, such beautiful things to say.
You can ask us any questions. I mean, this is a conversation, you know, we don't look at this as an interview, but it's a real conversation between us, between the three of us. So, yeah, absolutely, you can do that.
Well, I want to share that I got to experience the Someone to Tell It To activity.
Yes, please. Let's talk about that.
Yes. I had a call last week where two of your volunteers called me at the time we set. You know, we had a little brief email exchange, picked a time, called me, and the feeling of just being able to talk about whatever you want and have someone listen to it. And I don't mean, you know, but I do mean, you know, I was talking about pickles and Ultimate Frisbee and how my life was really changing because of pickles, and I wasn't going to be able to play as much Ultimate Frisbee, and the kind of allowance that someone's going to give you the time to talk about something that on the surface is simple, But if you pull it out, there's a reason that it's on your mind. And it just, it's like taking a deck of cards that's all mixed up over the table and just doing the, you know, shaking it together. And so it becomes the rectangle again. And I felt so glad to be able to just express a thought process that I was trying to have, and to have someone give me the space to think it out loud, to reflect how I was feeling, the joys that I got, the challenges that I was facing, the choices that I was deliberating, without trying to tell me what I should do, which is such a barrier to good listening, is someone who is trying to make themselves comfortable by solving your problem as soon as possible. It's having someone who has a problem in front of you for 45 minutes. Oh gosh, I can see the answer. You just need to think of it like this. You know, instead of having someone derail your train of thought to try and fix your problem, but someone who just lets you take the train from one side of the station to the next one. And I can fix the problem, but I just want to talk through it. And that was a really, I think that for me, even maybe more, or this is a unique experience that I got to have, is I spent a lot of time being the listener and listening to people do this at the table. And to be able to just talk something out that even I was second guessing myself, is this still interesting? You know, and for the person on the other side to say, yeah, I didn't ask them if it was interesting, but they respond in a way that showed me that they were still fully attentive. And not only one person, but two people. It reminded me of, you know, after I got the phone, I felt so terrific. I only got off the phone because I had to, because of the timing, but I was like, I got to do this again. This is amazing. I have so much more to talk about. It reminded me how powerful just listening to someone can make a huge effect on their mood. I was charged up. I felt really happy about the choices I was making. And just made me go, wow, this really does, this simple activity really makes a huge difference in the mood I had for the day. And it was just terrific. So I'm really grateful that that service existed in the way that it did.
I want to share this. This morning, I saw one of those two people who were listening to you and you were in conversation with. And they did not share what you talked about. I didn't ask because I, you know, that was for you and that was for them to know. But they just approached me and said how much they enjoyed the conversation, how much you were just delightful and so fascinating to listen to and to share that time with. And it was their first listening interaction for someone to tell it to. And
wow,
it could not have been better. So I just want to share that for you, with you, to know how much, not only we hope, as you're saying, our listeners listened well to you and gave you an experience that was so positive, but you gave them an experience that was so positive too. And especially for the one who was their first time, you set them on a, you know, that you raised the bar so highly for them. And that person listens to our podcasts. And
wow.
So I hope that they will listen. They'll be listening to this one and will know that we were able to express to you their delight in the conversation.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that. But I think you've brought up a really under talked about point, which is that after the conversation ends and we go our separate ways, there is a lingering effect for both the person who got to unload and the person who got to realize, wow, Mike, you know, this helped somebody and also was amazing. And they didn't know it helped me necessarily because I didn't get to, this is the conversation that we're having about it now. It is this practice that I've started incorporating in my trainings called Gifts Received, which is you tell somebody how being able to listen to them has helped you as a listener. You know, thank you for talking to me about all this because it helped me with my patients. You know, I do the listening table not to, the initial concept was I do it to become a better listener. And it took a while for me to realize that the person who's sharing also gets a benefit. And just the reverse way, the people who want to be listeners to help other people unload, right? The people who get to have it told to them through your volunteers, the people who want to make the world a less lonely place at the listening tables through by volunteers, the listeners themselves get the gift of, well, it depends, but it's a gift. It's such a beautiful thing to be able to, you know, I remember when people ask me, doesn't it get hard for you to listen to someone if they talk for 45 minutes? It was at the beginning, you know, but I practiced it and people gave me the opportunity to listen for longer periods of time. It used to be harder for me to listen to things that I disagreed with, but people gave me the gift of sharing their vulnerable, possibly controversial conversations with me, a stranger, you know, to say, I'm willing to place my trust in you. And they're not even thinking about what it's doing for me because they're just venting off themselves. But then when I share with them how it was beneficial for me, I think it really brings another level to the conversation or the interaction, especially because I think people carry a lot of guilt when it comes to taking up space, taking time in a conversation. Oh, I shouldn't talk that much. I should let you have part of the conversation. I shouldn't, you know, talk about this for more than 10 minutes or 5 minutes or maybe 15 minutes because that's not fair, right? People feel these feelings of guilt or being selfish or self-centered. And when you're able to rebuff that by saying, this is a space for you, first of all. And second, just because you're talking, I'm still getting something out of it. I'm still, you know, maybe it's helped me see something in a different light, or I've gotten to learn how to be empathetic about something I never considered a thing. I think that it really is a regenerative practice for people to say, take up the space. I'm giving it to you. And just because I'm not the one talking the whole time doesn't mean I'm not benefiting from my own personal part of the conversation.
And I just think that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And I'd like to ask, like, what's one of the best lessons you've learned since human being, since starting the listening table?
One of the best lessons I have learned since starting the listening table is, okay, there we go. One of the best lessons I've learned since starting the listening table is that listening takes practice. That's the simplest one, is that I've gotten better at it by doing it. It makes sense. But I think that it just goes to show that it's just like weightlifting. You know, you can only lift heavy weights if you start with the light ones. And you got to work your way up. But once you're more agile, you know, or strong in this metaphor, you're able to go into harder conversations, like a breakup, like a hard work conversation, and feel confident that you can hold the space for the emotions that come up without letting them control you. So that this skill is learnable and takes time. Right? It takes time. You can't just do one listening table or one someone to tell it to conversation and feel like, oh, I've got it. You know, I've done almost 200 now, and I feel like I'm just starting to get rolling here.
So what's your vision for the next 10 years, Orly? What would you like to see happen through the table?
You know, my biggest goal is to one day be walking down the street and see a listening table that I don't know anything about. That would be mind-blowing. Within 10 years, I have some personal goals. I'd like to do a couple speeches at universities to speak to groups of younger people and really motivate them to see that this is a skill you have to build before you're catapulted into the world and start thinking about, oh, I've got to work so much, maybe not spend time with my friends and family. You know, there's this discipline kind of mindset that people get from pro athletes where you got to sacrifice your relationships if you want to be good at what you do. And I think that for most of us who aren't pro athletes, like, sacrificing relationships is generally not the best move. I think you should sacrifice other things to keep your relationships. I think I'd like to see one of the things I'm working on. I don't know if this is 10 years or 3 months, but I'm really hoping to create I haven't even found the word for it yet, but some sort of onboarding process that will allow students and young people and community leaders to be able to explain the purpose of the listening table to their whoever, to say, I want to do this and this is why. You know, I feel like right now I just set up, it makes sense, but it doesn't, you know, there's some materials that I need to develop that a student can go to their faculty and say, here's a pamphlet, this is what I want to do. You know, I want to do this at lunch without having to explain, oh, I think it's a cool idea, but instead having a bunch of data that says, you know, this is actually really regenerative for the social environment. And I'd like to write a book. In 10 years, I think I'd like to write 3 or 4 of them.
I love it.
Yeah, we certainly do.
What, maybe there's one final question here. What's brought you the greatest joy from this experience, the listening tables and the listening that you've done? What has filled you? Is there a story? Is there an experience? Is there just feeling that has just filled you up with joy because you're doing this great work?
Yeah, there is. There's two. And the first one is that sometimes when I sit at the listening table, I feel at peace. I feel like this is exactly where I'm supposed to be right now. And I'm doing exactly the thing I'm supposed to be doing. And it's beautiful because I'm not on a computer. I'm not on my phone. You know, I'm not sending emails. But I feel like I'm doing something that is making the world a better place and loving it, which is just such a feeling I never had before. When I sit here and I go, I'm just sitting here and it's everything I could possibly want. It's remarkable. And the second thing that brings me joy is I'm a catalyst now for people around me to be able to have conversations about conversation. You know, I've been at several dinners or events or places where someone says something about how they like to be talked to or that they don't like when people do this because, oh, the communication guy, the listening guy is here. you know, and I, the listening guys here, and you're interrupting, you know, not me. Sometimes I do. I'm not perfect. But just being able to see people starting to think more about, oh, I didn't know you didn't like being interrupted all the time. I thought you were cool with it. Well, I'm not, you know, and being able to provide a catalyst for conversations that help people take control of the choices they make and realize they have control of it. Oh, it's, I don't even have to say anything. I just show up sometimes. You know, I just show up, sit at the table. I don't even participate. I'm just there. Oh, Orly, you shouldn't have come. Now we're fighting about it because we interrupt. So I'm like, this is, you're getting closer to the truth of how you get along. So I just love it so much.
It's awesome. Thank you. We've said since day one, the first conversation that I know I had privately with you, you're just a good human being, and you're the type of people we want to spend as much time with as possible because you want so badly just to make the world a better place. So thank you.
Yeah. And you spoke about, you know, being at peace when you listen. I think this conversation has provided us a place of peace for me and for Tom as well. We thank you for that.
This is a great joy for me. It really is. I cannot express how much I admire how you have built such a simple and beautiful facility to help people with such a heartbreaking and invisible struggle. That is loneliness. So,
hold a mirror to yourself.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We'd say the same thing about you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, thanks, Orly. It's been great.
You.
One of the things that we're most happy about with this conversation, and there are many things we're happy about, it is that Orly had some team members from Someone to Tell It To listen to him recently. And he, the fact that he loved that experience, mm-hmm. and the fact that we've heard from the listeners that they loved it too, it just means the world to us, because we know that that experience was something that satisfied him. And it was something that satisfied and brought joy to them. And that means a lot to us to know that what we do here with Someone to Tell It To has meaning and power, and that he wants to do it again and again. And that's pretty neat.
It's such a good reminder. I'm glad that you brought that up, because even us as listeners, we all need to be listened to ourselves.
Right.
And so Orly, you know, he sets up shop at his listening table consistently, well over 100 times now. And he does an awful lot of listening, but yet he was reminded again how much we all need to be heard. And so it's just an important reminder to make sure that we have those people in our lives that we can tell it to. And so if you don't have someone to tell it to, that's why we always encourage you to go to our website, someonetotellitto.org. We have teams of listeners that are available. So maybe if there was something in this conversation that was evoked in you and you need to process that, please reach out to us. And we're just grateful to have you always on our journey with us. And we look forward to our next dialogue. Until we listen again.